Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to take a real close look at the immunostimulatory effects of ginseng, the polysaccharides, the chemicals in them. From Kyoji University in South Korea, published an article in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine showing it's so good for our immune system. Kind of reminds me of a debate I did 45 years ago on television in New York City, where the physician I was debating was one of these quackbusters. Very pompous man, very arrogant. And he said, there is no scientific substantiation. It's just all nonsense. I brought out then 5,000 peer-reviewed studies and just started going through them. And the host says, well, we can't go through all these. I said, well, the point is, he says none exists and I have 5,000. So which is it? And I handed him to the host. And mind you, that was 45 years ago. How many exist today? Tens of thousands. And yet, ask the average American, what do you know about ginseng to help your immune system? Probably nothing. You will today. One more piece of the puzzle, keeping us healthy. Good news today. I'll hear when you hear. I haven't spoken with anyone yet. That the anti-aging clinical study on campus is complete today. And we're going to bring people in from doing their power walk. They started early this morning. And they're going to tell us how they did. Lou Anne Panessi, who is the administrator down there of it, she will be giving us some of the objective biomarkers, meaning this isn't subjective, this is reality. Now, keep in mind when you hear the percentages of increase above what they started with, that 5% increase is considered statistically significant. Well, I'm willing to bet, because I just left them, that we're going to have some astronomical improvements. Because I've seen him working out in the gym every day. I worked out with him every day in the gym, on the road, in the pool. So we'll hear good news about that. In another month, we'll invite some of the people who are doing the same identical protocols, but doing it from their home on, and we'll get the results of that. But I did have a conference call meeting 2 weeks ago Saturday. I got a lot of positive feedback. One person lost over 30 pounds. So we'll give you the good news on all this. And this is a confirmatory study. So this is what we had to do to prove that the first study with great results 9 months ago wasn't a fluke. So now we've proven it. We've established a whole new paradigm in aging, the science of aging, and in the diseases we call of aging, which are actually not. Therefore, we can prevent all the dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, diabetes. We can prevent all these. So that's to come. And then the guest in the second part of our program today is Robert Kennedy Jr. He'll be talking about a lawsuit against Merck and its Gardasil vaccine. And we'll see if people in this audience have been victims of that Gardasil vaccine. Also today, we're going to play you Harvard law professor, constitutional law professor, his statements that you have no choice. The Constitution provides the right of the state to come in and forcibly take you anywhere they want and jab a needle into your arm. That's what he says. But we now have a whole group of constitutional lawyers who are going to offer challenges over the next week to that, to Alan Dershowitz's statements. I'll also ask Robert Kennedy about it, because there's something that no one is discussing anywhere in the media, and we will be, in a series of articles, fully documented. Our articles you could take into a court of law and present them as evidence. They've all been vetted legally and for accuracy. So we're going to now show you that the entire foundation upon which vaccinations are being given, and hence a mandatory vaccine, is itself flawed. Therefore, there is no justification for doing that. So that's our program today. Let us now go to the latest on ginseng and other health issues. What happens is when you take ginseng, generally as a powder, it's a little gritty, a little earthy. You put it into a ginseng tea, and it activates your natural killer, or what are called NK cells, and that helps inhibit tumors. Also, ginseng root has been used in traditional Chinese medicine for the enhancement of immune system function. And the researchers isolated a crude polysaccharide called GBPP and took a look at it up close and found that it was very, very good for the immune system. So one more reason to take your ginseng each day. It helps prevent cancer, metastasis, and activation of your natural killer cells and other immune-related cells. From Chungnam National University in South Korea comes a study about exercising and using curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, in combination. It improves cognitive function, in this case in the laboratory in diabetic rats, and it's one of the nutrients that I ask people who are exercising to take after their exercise, along with magnesium, cayenne, vitamin E, L-carnosine, quercetin, vitamin C, because those are all natural for the heart, the mitochondria, thinning the blood, and so you get the benefit of the exercise, but none of the down side effects. So here they found that exercise and healthy diet are known to be beneficial to anyone suffering from diabetes mellitus, which is a metabolic disorder. And generally you end up with chronic low-grade inflammation. And that's unfortunate because any form of inflammation speeds up the aging process, contributes to a lot of cell damage. That's why you may not think that French fries, potato chips, pretzels, these are okay, pizzas. Remember the crust, buns, hot dogs, hamburgers, the buns, when they turn brown, which they do, that's acrylamides. The meat that goes in between the bun, that's heterocyclic amines. And then sodium nitrite is used as a preservative to keep the meat looking red. See, most people don't realize if you look at meat after a couple days and there's no color stabilizer in it, it'll turn kind of gray and it stinks to high heaven. It's putrefying. In fact, in the Old West, they would have an aging house was very crude, very simple. Let's say you take a big room in a barn and you have one of the hooks that you hang a piece of beef up on, and you take it from one room where it's warm, and then you roll it into another room on this trolley system above you, and it's cooler. They might have had ice in there, so you heat it up, cool it down, heat it up, cool it down. What happens is that an otherwise low-fat content beef, and all the beef in the Old West was all low-fat, probably, after you take a 1,000-mile cattle herd from the upper Montana into the pastures in the spring where they fatten up, have plenty of land to eat the grass, and then you bring them down to Texas, that's a long haul. So they lose their fat along the way. And so when they get there, the meat is very tough. So to make it easier to eat, they figured out, that you speeded this up. But it stinks to high heavens. I mean, it's like the smell of death, because it is. And so they sold, prime aged beef. Now think of that. Prime aged beef. Eliminate with extreme prejudice. From Apocalypse Now. No, you're going to go kill someone when you're eating a piece of meat that is, it's zombified. I mean, look at a zombie film, and that's the meat you're eating. That's the reality, simple reality. It stinks. But someone figured out people don't want to eat something that smells, and looks gray because the blood clots are going to clot. And look at your own hand. When you have blood comes out, it's red, and then it, and sometimes a little pinkish. How much oxygen you have in your body, for example, and the level of your heme. And then it clots, and then that clot turns darker, 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 so almost a reddish-black color. That's what a hamburger hot dog would look like if they didn't use sodium nitrite, which stabilizes, but it's a carcinogenic agent. So that's why every time you eat any of these comfort foods, or for most people what they consider normal eating, you're creating massive inflammatory responses in the body, and that's dangerous. It's that simple. By the way, if let's just say that you're 150 years ago and you're out in Wichita, one of the places, Dodsworth, you go into a bar, and at nighttime, what the movies made it look like, completely different. First of all, the people are not stupid. They had more people in these towns than they had room for them to sleep, so they'd rent space to sleep on the floor of the bar. And they didn't like the fact they were sleeping where people would spit, because almost everyone, men and women, would chew tobacco. I had guys I grew up with in my hometown who thought it'd be cool because the baseball players, you know, chewed and spit and chewed and spit. So they'd get this pull, and some of them even used snuff. That, now that's really gross. And they would stick it in their jaw. Well, you get up close to them, and their breath stunk. I mean bad. And then after about 3 months of that, you'd start seeing bleeding and irritation of their gum lines because it's very, very acidic. But it was, you know, and tobacco juice is a bitter, bitter juice. The whole purpose is just macabre. It's like drinking wine. And, you know, that tastes like dirty socks. But try to make it something else. That's the beauty of illusion. Make it a bouquet, right? Yeah. I don't think so. Bouquets in funeral homes smell better than this stuff. In any case, that's where spittoons came from. So every bar and every seat had a spittoon. That's assuming someone could hit the spittoon. And then someone would come at the end of the day and collect all that spit and take it outside and throw it out. And when people would come into the saloons, there were massive amounts of dust. And dust was everywhere. Everything was dirty. There was nothing clean in the Old West at all, especially the people. There was no hygiene whatsoever. People rarely, if ever, bathed. Cowboys never bathed. They'd get to town, and then if there were some laundry, they'd give their clothes over to a laundry and then take a bath. You wouldn't want to be in the bathwater that these guys were in. And nobody bathed. Very few people ever brushed their teeth. Gingivitis, gum disease, was rampant. The food was not tasty. A lot of potatoes, because you could store them. Root vegetables you could store them. Don't have to take those out of the ground. Nothing was clean. So let's say someone pulled a carrot or anything else out and they had it in a basket or potato. Nobody washed them. You know, they just put them in a fire and, you know, and bake them or roast them. The meat was on a grill. I can assure you that grill was never cleaned. There was no such thing as, you know, sterility in the old, as far as an environment in the Old West. Now, that was good and bad. It was bad because a lot of people died of diseases from having weakened immune system. It was good in the sense that if you grew up on a farm and a ranch, you'd be exposed to a lot of natural environmental contaminants, pollens and danders and microorganisms, and that would have, over time, strengthened your immune system. That would have built natural immunity. But people didn't live long lives, and it was hot. You couldn't walk out with a short-sleeved shirt. In the middle of summer, it might be 100 degrees. You had to have the full outfit, same way in the Old South. They didn't even have fans. You just sweat and stunk. So everybody sweat and stunk. Now, use bedpans, throw it out the window. So when you see those streets where it was all mud, that would have been the real, real deal. Or dust everywhere. That would have been the real deal. So we over-romanticize what it would be like. There was nothing romantic about it. University of Illinois. The microbes that inhabit our bodies are influenced by what we eat, drink, and breathe, and also absorb through the skin. And most of us are chronically exposed to natural and human-made environmental contaminants that we know. Well, there's a new paper saying that what's in the air and how, let's say, you might cook with microwave food, which is really dangerous. All those chemicals that are in the plastics, even when you're outside and you're drinking in the hot sun from plastic bottles. Remember, I even did a show on this back in the 1991 or first Iraq war. They took millions of bottles of water over there, and they were left outside. 120 degrees was not unusual. That meant that all those chemicals were leaching from the water in the bottle into the water. Very, very dangerous, because it's not easy to get those chemicals out of the body. In any case, just today, they're releasing a saying, quote, dozens of environmental chemicals can change the gut microbiome and hence cause health problems. And this was published in the journal Toxicological Sciences. So what it means is that we've got to be aware that these biphenyls found in plastic food packaging and the phthalates, which are used in everything from vinyl floor to plastic films, those are all toxic. Go with stainless steel, iron. Go with natural materials. Stay away from the PCBs, the flame retardants, the fluorochemicals, the non-stick cookware and food packaging, because they're all dangerous. And finally, replacing time spent sitting with sleep or light activity can improve your mood. Iowa State University, published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. If you sit for more than 2 hours, get up and move around, because it's not good for you. Walking after sitting lowers your stress, gives you a better mood, and lowers your body mass index. So light exercise, maybe 5 times a day for 5 to 10 minutes, is good for you. That's the latest on health and healing. Down to the mountains of Northeast Texas now, where Lou Ann Panessi is just wrapping up today with the final day of our on-campus anti-aging clinical study. Lou Ann, nice to have you with us. And you have some people there to tell us how they've done.
Oh, do I ever. Well, Gary, so many people that I speak to on the phone think that when you get old, it's about, especially in the last chapter of your life, you should be slowing down, taking it easy, and watching your body fall apart. Well, not this group. I have witnessed the most amazing physical, emotional, mental results that I think I've ever seen. We had some great results at the last anti-aging study, and we have transcended them in this study. So I have three people here that I just pulled off the track. They're in the middle of their marathon. In fact, Susan Kreil, who's going to start us off, are you ready for this? She had some issues with it. She couldn't power walk, but you had her on a set resistance on the bike so that 2 hours of biking would have equaled a marathon. Well, Gary, she just finished 4 hours on the bike. She had a double marathon.
At a very high resistance, where the average person might be able to do a minute, where you can barely push the legs. Susan, nice to have you with us. Tell us what has changed in the last 60 days.
Oh, my God. I don't... so much. I mean, I think that apart from the results have been amazing. I'm just looking here at the difference between the depression scale, which was a total of 13 when I came in, and it's 2.5 now. And I, you know, I didn't even think I was depressed. On the fitness testing, I started on the ropes with 25 times, and I did 22 minutes. The VersaClimber, which I never did after the first time because I thought it was yours, Gary, and that no one was allowed on it, it was 3 minutes, and I ended up doing 25 minutes. I did 200 sit-ups and 150 pull-downs and 240 wall ball the squats, all of which were so far above what I'd started. So that in and of itself was absolutely astonishing. Everything changed on the impediment, impedience. My weight went down 6 pounds. My body fat went up, went from 16% to 13.8. The water level stayed roughly the same at 52. The muscle went from 32.4 to 35.7, and the bone went from 4 to 4.4. So all of these results are incredible, but I think the most important thing is that it made me I might cry.
Okay.
Just take a deep breath.
Go ahead. You're good.
It's all right.
It made me realize that there is so much that I have just let disappear without being aware of it, so that my life is getting smaller and smaller without my knowing it. And I think being in the communal atmosphere and being part of a sharing communal group and all of the lectures and everything that you've given us just simply has been totally expansive. I think I've said as much as I can without just weeping.
She spent over, 20 years alone, meaning out of social circles and out of social contact. And she had a lot of battles she had to fight. And so not just her, but virtually everyone had a lot of past issues they had to clean up in order to go forward with a whole new sense of identity.
First off, I want to start off with thanking everybody that was here. You, Luann, the entire crew, and especially the participants. We started off as a group of strangers, and we became a cohesive unit, which was amazing to see. Me personally, I came here. I was depressed, lethargic, no direction, no oomph, I guess is the best way to describe it, no spark. And this depression scale thing, I went from a 6 down to 0. Physically is a little more obvious. When we first came to do the work, my blood pressure when I first came here was 140 over 72. It's now 126 over 68. From what I understand in layperson's language is when I got here, I was a walking heart attack or stroke, and now I'm no longer in danger, which is a huge relief off of just the psychological pressure. The 211, my weight was 211.2 down to 184.6. My goal was to get to 20 pounds, so I was only off by 2.5 pounds. My body fat, my beer belly, of which I don't drink any beer, was 25.4%, and now it's down to 19.2. I can now look down. My goal was to look down and see my feet, and I ended up the goal is I can look down and I can see my shoelaces. So that's even better. My water is 42.9. It was 42.9 when I got here, so I was a little dehydrated, and I'm now up to 49. And that's after sweating tons and tons and tons of water, working outside in this part of the country this time of year. My muscle went from 36 to 38.5, which I'm being told is quite significant. My bone went from 4.8 pounds, is it 4.8 pounds? Mm-hmm. To 5.2 pounds, which is a huge jump for that particular statistic. In the gym, this is where the real magic happens. When I first got here, we did the ropes exercise, and I lasted about a minute and 43 seconds. At the test, they stopped me at 20 minutes. They just needed to take a break. the VersaClimber, what a machine. When I first started, it was 2 minutes and 10 seconds. At the end, it was 35 minutes and change. So a 33-minute improvement on that. I went from 10 push-ups to 25. I went from sit-ups, I went from 100 to 240. Shoulder pull-downs, I went from 100 to 125. And then wall ball squats was 30, and I went up to 160. And my power walking, we have to do that test. So that was physically, the changes are remarkable. And as each pound came off, my confidence, my sparking for life, we were working heavy the whole time we were here. They found that I could run a chainsaw, and they took full advantage of that.
Are there any trees left in Northeast Texas?
No, not in this part.
Okay. All right.
Well,
you've done extremely well. I consider your greatest improvement from my observations to be in your attitude and your sense of lightness of being compared to what you arrived. But that's at the end of the day, you're the judge of your greatest improvement. We're running out a little time, so I want to speed it up. We have one more person there. Also, you all have to go back out on the road because this is the last day to finish your long workout.
Yes.
Who else do we have?
Hi, Gary. This is John C.
Hi, John.
I've just come in from my just finished my 16th mile, and I'm ready to go out again and do a lot more. The body measurements in my fitness testing it was so wonderful. Ropes was 6 minutes, and I went to 21 minutes. VersaClimber was 10 minutes. I went to 31 minutes. Push-ups were 30. I went to 33. My sit-ups were 80. I went to 410.
410.
Whoa, whoa.
Shoulder pull-down with 95 pounds went from 40 to 101. Ball squats went from 100 to 210. And those numbers, I feel so humbled by all that because of all the work we've done here and all the things that I've learned here. But what is the most important thing for me is that I have learned how my conditioned mind, how I want to stay safe and go with comfort, is hurting me so much in my life. And I have decided that where I live right now is not sustainable, and I have to move away from it, and it's going to be really uncomfortable. But, you know, doing all these exercises is really uncomfortable, but after you accomplish something, you feel so darn good. And I want that with my emotional life as well as my physical life. And that's what I have to thank you for, everyone here. It's a great family. We started out unknowns, but we're now a very cohesive family. And I think if we were another month, we could probably build another villa.
Don't give him any ideas.
No.
Thank you for everything, Gary. It's been a wonderful time.
Those are just three of the many people who are just finishing today. So, Luann, wrap it up for us. Oh, she's gone. Okay. Well, there you heard just three of the people, and they were out doing the workouts. There are six stages to the different protocols. The stages are the juicing, the diet, the vegan diet, the exercising, the meditations, journaling, nature time, and then self-evaluations to see where are you at today compared to where you've been. What are you willing to surrender from the past that doesn't work for you? What are you willing to embrace going forward? Are you willing to be the architect of the next part of your life? And these are all accomplished people in their different fields. And not easy dealing with older people. I'm going to guess the average age was around 75, 77. And some of the most remarkable outcomes were people who left earlier in the week because they finished their 60 days. Not everyone started on the same time. Some were a week, One is still going to be there for a while because he came a little later. But every single person made changes that were statistically significant. I mean major changes. Now, I haven't seen their final results. Luann has. But tomorrow they go home and continue the last 30 days at home. So that's it on that. And I've gotten a lot of requests to do it again. I can't. I don't have the time to do, because when I do this, it takes 90 days out of my life. I can't do lectures. I can't travel around the world. And because the results that we've seen and duplicated results, and even better this time around, I'm being invited all over the world. So I'll be spending about 40 days a year at 40 different conferences of anti-aging scientists to share the results. We filmed everything. And I'm writing up with the scientific panel, the peer review panel, the results, and then it'll be submitted. Once it's all submitted, then I'll do a whole hour to share this with you. I am considering, though have not finally decided, something that came up because Luann was mentioning that she received thousands of calls from younger people, younger meaning from 40 to 70. And I told her, no, this has to be strictly senior citizens, which it was. But I may do a 1 month with just 40 to 65-year-olds to see if it's possible to change their biochemistry so that instead of working with older people who are in the last stage of life, I can work with people so that they can get the benefit of adding maybe 30 to 40 years onto the lifespan with no diseases. I'll think about that in the near future, and then I'll decide what I'm going to do. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world, all the people who are listening over the different stations. Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to share information with you. Right now on the phone is Robert Kennedy Jr. He is an ardent defender of the environment and of the health of children. As a world leader in protecting the environment, he is the founder and president of the Waterkeeper Alliance. Last year, he founded Children's Health Defense, a children's advocacy organization dedicated to enlightening the public about toxic risks to children, including vaccines and aluminum and fluoride and pesticides and food additives and electromagnetic frequencies and technologies such as that. The organization also serves as a watchdog on federal and state vaccine policies. Earlier, Robert served as the Assistant District Attorney for New York City, an advocate for the rights of South American and Canadian Indigenous tribes. He has successfully strengthened treaties to protect Indigenous homelands. He holds a degree from Harvard and law degrees from University of Virginia and Pace University School of Law. He is the author of Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak, the evidence supporting the immediate removal of mercury. His websites are childrenshealthdefense.org and robertfkennedyjr.com. Nice to have you with us today. Can you hear me, Robert?
Yeah, I can hear you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm going to start the program, this discussion, by having you here in the audience also. You may have heard it. Alan Dershowitz making this statement, and now he's going across the country taking on anyone who challenges vaccines. And here's what he's saying. So, Jesse, please play this clip.
Be legitimate. Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right to endanger the public and spread a disease, even if you disagree. You have no right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business.
Wait, can I stop you? Right not to be vaccinated? Meaning if they decide you have to be vaccinated, we have to be vaccinated?
Absolutely. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm. If the vaccination if the vaccination is designed to prevent the spreading disease, if the vaccination is only to prevent a disease that you will get, for example, if there's a disease that will kill you, you have the right to refuse that, but you have no right to refuse to be vaccinated against a contagious disease. Public health, the police power of the Constitution, gives the state the power to compel that, and there are cases in the United States Supreme Court case that pops into my head, I may have the name wrong, is Jacobson. I think probably I have it right. Check it out. You'll see that there are cases after cases after cases that the public health permits reasonable actions to prevent the spread of communicable diseases. Most of them grow out of tuberculosis cases in the early 20th century, but some are more recent than that. But there is still an issue of whether the governor has the authority to create laws, and that's a matter of state legislation.
Yeah.
But you've opened up a whole new area here, so
right.
The governor has the right, or sorry.
Okay. Robert, would you first respond to his statements that we have no rights if the government at this time wants to come into our homes? And in the state of Washington, the governor there has stated that they are hiring thousands upon thousands of people. And if you're not willing to be tested, or if they determine that you need a vaccine, then they have a person that will monitor you, and you're not allowed out of your house. You can't even go out to shop for food, or you can be arrested. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, his statements, although it's a very, very extreme view, at least his kind of minimal assertion that government has the right to require you to be vaccinated is an accurate statement of the current status of the federal law. And the case that he mentioned, which is the Jacobson case, was a 1905 case that had to do with the smallpox vaccine. In that case, it was different than what he's saying in this sense. There was a lot of distinctions. That the case was a case where it wouldn't force you to be vaccinated, but they would force you to pay a $5 fine if you didn't get vaccinated. And, you know, somebody, Jacobson, challenged that and said the government doesn't have a right to do that. And so it went to the Supreme Court. At that time, and the Supreme Court, in its decision, majority decision, a series of provisos indicating that that this would not be true if there was a risk associated with a vaccine. And that is an issue that has not been litigated. And, you know, let me give you an example that I think Alan Dershowitz would probably moderate his views if he was confronted with the fact that, because he's making the, you know, the consensual, he's adopted the orthodoxy that all vaccines are safe for all people, and therefore it's unreasonable for somebody to refuse vaccination, and it's antisocial. And I'll just give you this example. When Merck tested its Gardasil vaccine, they found that the Gardasil vaccine, the people in the study group, in other words, the people who got the vaccine, had 37 times the death rate for ovarian cancer, for cervical cancer. They had 10 times the background rate for reproductive problems. In other words, if you got that vaccine, you were 10 times more likely to get premature ovarian failure. And they were, and one out of every 37 girls got autoimmune diseases within 6 months of getting the shot. So that's an injury rate of 2.3%. And I would ask Alan Hershowitz, I'm sure he doesn't know any of these facts, but I would say to him, does the government have a right to give you an injection that has a 1 in 37 chance of giving you a devastating lifetime disease in order to prevent a cancer that you have a 1 in 37,000 chance of dying from 50 years later? So they're giving it to 9-year-old girls to prevent a cancer where the average death is 58, and it kills 1 in every 37,000 Americans. And, you know, I would say, is that reasonable? And you can ask, essentially, and I think he would say no. The government would have no right to do that. I think Dershowitz's problem is, that, or his error, let's say, is that he doesn't understand vaccine injury. He's accepting the orthodoxy that vaccine injury doesn't exist. He probably does not know that the federal government has paid out $4 billion to people who were injured by vaccines, and that HHS admits that that is less than 1% of the total, because HHS's own study shows that fewer than 1% of vaccine injuries is ever reported. And so the question then is this old philosophical question: if I can kill one person to save three, if the government can kill one American citizen to save three others, does it have the right to do that? And I think the law and philosophers for generations have said it does not have that right. And that question has never been presented to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, when it made the Jacobson decision in 1905, was basing that decision on the idea that smallpox vaccine had no adverse events or no adverse consequences, that it always worked, and that it had the capacity to stem the spread of smallpox, which was a really horrible disease. Now, Glaxo has a vaccine called the Bexsero vaccine, which is a meningitis vaccine. And on its manufacturer's insert, Glaxo acknowledges that that vaccine will cause Kawasaki disease in three in every 1,000 children. So in other words, it says one out of every 1,000 shots causes Kawasaki disease, but the shot is recommended, three shots are recommended for every child. So that means one in 300 child children are going to get injured. Does the government have the right to say, I'm going to inject all these kids? And there's only, Kawasaki or meningitis only kills half a dozen people a year. It's not like smallpox, which was a genuine pandemic. The risk that you're avoiding by taking the shot is probably outweighed by the risk of taking the shot. And I think if those facts were laid out to the Supreme Court, they would say, no way. You look at a vaccine called, like, the hepatitis vaccine. The hepatitis vaccine was a vaccine that was designed for hepatitis B, really only affected three groups, which were promiscuous male homosexuals, intravenous drug users who shared needles, and prostitutes who engage in unprotected sex. The vaccine was designed for those groups because they were getting hurt by hepatitis B. And CDC made a recommendation for those groups. But when Merck created the vaccine, it turned out it couldn't sell any because those particular groups had no interest in buying the vaccine. And so Merck went back to CDC and said, listen, we made this factory and we're not making any money on this vaccine. You need to do something to help us. So CDC said, no problem. We will just mandated for babies. And they now mandate most babies are at zero risk for hepatitis B, little to zero. There are children who are at risk, and those are children whose mothers have hepatitis B. But every mother who goes into a hospital to have a baby in our country is tested, so we know who those children are. And those children are children that it may be beneficial to get the vaccine. But a normal child whose mother is not infected has zero risk and will not have a risk at least until their mid-teens or late teens. And yet we give that to every baby the day they're born. and it's loaded with aluminum. So it's loaded with a neurotoxin that has never been tested for safety. The vaccine only lasts for 2 years. It provides immunity to children for only 2 years, so that baby has to be then injected again when they're 2 years old. Well, between the day they're born and the day they're 2 years old, there is zero chance that they are going to engage in homosexual sex or be involved with a prostitute or shoot drugs and share needles. And so all this is, the only reason for that vaccine is a financial benefit that Merck and now Glaxo get from having it mandated to children. And if the Supreme Court actually looked at those facts, they would not have issued that decision. So I think, you know, he has this kind of tenacity and, you know, this up-in-your-grill attitude that, yeah, if you refuse a vaccine, you're crazy. There's no reason not to. All vaccines work, and none of them injure people, and the state has a right, therefore, to stop you from becoming Typhoid Mary and spreading contagion, you know, all over. And that, of course, is the dominant narrative about vaccines that has been promoted by pharma and by the regulatory agencies, but it has little truth to it. And you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is to figure out ways to enlarge this discussion, not only in the mainstream media, but also, you know, in the courts, and say to the courts and get a case where we can make this argument. And that's the challenge, because the 1986 Vaccine Act, as you know, gives blanket immunity from liability to vaccine makers. So no matter how egregious your injury, no matter how negligent the company was, no matter how toxic the ingredients, you cannot sue that company for injuring your child. And because of that, there is really no opportunity for us to make those arguments in front of a court. We can never get to the court to make those arguments. And that's what, you know, our challenge has been at Children's Health Defense, is how do we structure a lawsuit to get around the 1986 Act so that we can actually make that argument in the lower court and then, if possible, in the appellate court and even up to the Supreme Court and get those old laws altered. And, you know, we think that we found a formula for doing that. And we have a number of lawsuits now, which we've, you know, we're already past motion to dismiss in our case on Gardasil. I'm trying a case in November in Tennessee on autism and vaccines, first one for 20 years that has been allowed into court. So we're finding little cracks in the concrete that guards this fortress. And when we get through, you know, they have created a structure that by piling fraud upon fraud upon fraud upon fraud, and it's now so tall and large and unwieldy that if you kick out a brick, the whole thing will tumble down.
What can we do to help you with your efforts?
Well, the best thing for people to do is to join Children's Health Defense. Because we need your email, we need to be able to claim you're a member. We need to create institutions that are big enough to consistently challenge the institutions that they have at their disposal, which means all the health agencies, the pharmaceutical companies, an entire army of front groups, the WHO and people like Bill Gates, who have billions of dollars, hundreds of billions that they're putting into this effort to strangle human rights and to forcibly vaccinate everybody on the planet with their, you know, with their products. And we need to build institutions. You can't, you know, we have a huge grassroots movement, but it's never been organized. And what we're doing is we're trying to organize a movement by serving the public on this, by creating, by creating science and archiving and making it accessible and weaponizing it so that people all over the country can use it when they go to their state legislatures, when they write letters to the newspapers, when or the editors or publish editorials, whatever, or they talk to their neighbors, that they'll actually be informed, that they'll know what they're saying is supported by published peer-reviewed science. And we try to make it accessible so that people can understand what the science says, what the implications are, and win this argument on the street and in the courts. So we need help. We need to find out. I have probably 30 promising lawsuits in the pipeline. We need to finance those lawsuits. And so finally, we need, you know, financial support if you can do that. And I won't say finally, because there's one other thing that people can do, Gary, and it's what you're doing, which is to spread the message, you know. And our movement has been in the closet, in the catacombs for years, because anybody who talks about this, they'll, you know, their pediatrician will fire them. They'll lose friendships. Family members will come after them. And with this very strange rage that is a feature of all orthodoxies. It's why when somebody challenges your religion, if there's something very personal about it and threatening about it, and this is a religion. It's not based, you know, the vaccine religion is not based on science. It's an orthodoxy. It's a biological impulse. And, you know, and so you have this attitude that this cannot be debated. It's dangerous. People who question the orthodoxy must be burned at the stake. They must be silenced. We cannot afford them to speak, because it will challenge our belief systems, and it will challenge our belief in these undeserving authorities in whom we have placed it. And so that kind of anger has backed many of our supporters, many people who know better, into a posture where they simply will not talk about this anymore, except with people they know are safe. And what we're trying to now say is this is our time. This COVID virus has gotten everybody talking about vaccines for the first time, and people are openly questioning vaccine safety. Oh, I'm safe in many quarters now to have this discussion. And what we would say is, go have the discussion. If you see us, we make cards, actually, Gary, that show the side effects. 420 side effects of vaccines that are on the manufacturer's insert. We have cards that tell you the ingredients of vaccines, the insect tissue, dog, cocker spaniel tissue, human fetal tissue from a baby that was forcibly aborted in 1966 at 14 weeks from a mother who was confined to a mental institution. And this is tissue, and then made tumorigenic, in other words, made carcinogenic, cancer-causing, in order to keep it immortal. And that cancerous DNA, male DNA, is being injected into female babies. And we have no idea what that means. We don't know whether the soft tissue cancer epidemic in the vaccine generation is coming from doing that to every single child. And, you know, and all these other ingredients, monkey marrow kidneys and pangolin tissue and formaldehyde and histidines and borax, which is banned as a food allergen additive in our vaccines, and of course, mercury and aluminum. And so we have those on a card, and we have other, you know, facts on cards. And if you carry those, you can get them from Children's Health Defense. Carry them if you see a woman who's pregnant, hand it to her. If you see a woman pushing a stroller on the street, hand her a card. If you, you know, leave them in places, in doctor's offices and places where people will see them. And start talking about this. Let's make it safe to talk about this again. We need to have this discussion. It needs to be open.
Robert, give us the address people can go to. I'm encouraging everyone in this audience to go to Robert's site, join up. We need to work together. It has to be we, all of us, working together.
We're at childrenshealthdefense.org. It's not Children's Defense Fund. And if you go to Children's Defense Fund, they're going to ask you all kinds of nosy questions, and you're going to get frightened. But that's not us. We are Children's Health Defense. And you go to our site, and you'll be able to get access to all the science and see what we're doing. And then please follow me on Instagram, because I post almost every day weaponized information that you can use in your arguments with people and in educating your friends and family. So it's Robert F. Kennedy Jr., you know, at Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on Instagram. And join me.
Robert,
we will.
And just good news, Peking University just today announced that scientists in China believe a new drug can stop the pandemic without a vaccine. Yet that got no news. They're all going towards a vaccine. And behind that is Fauci, Bill Gates Foundation, all of his six other companies he's funding to do this. And we're going to expose this. Richard Gale and I, over the next 4 weeks, are going to take on every mandated vaccine currently, and we're going to show you the side of the story they don't tell you about safety and efficacy of these vaccines. Again, the more information we share, the more educated an audience is, the better our side becomes in fighting. And we wish you all the best, Robert, in your efforts to, and I'll ask one of my friends, a very famous painter, if he could donate some original paintings of his. He's one of America's most famous painters, so that you could do an auction and raise some money for this. And we did this about 10 years ago, and he donated 100 paintings and all these. In fact, your group was there over to the Ethical Culture Center when we were premiering Knocking on the Devil's Door, Dead and Nuclear Legacy. So we're going to do all we can to help you raise some money and get people on board, and so you can fight the good fight on our behalf in the court system. And sooner or later, you will knock one of those bricks out, and the entire edifice of this whole mess will come tumbling down. Thank you very much for all your good work, Robert.